The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.
The nation's unemployment rate, as you may know, is 9.1%. In Michigan, it's even higher. And for many of these people, they're not just unemployed, but they've been unemployed for a very long time. How anxious are they to get back to work? Well, some people are so anxious to do it that they'll take half in their wages than their colleagues are making at their job. Detroit has what's being called a $14 solution. It's a two-tier wage system. That means people working for less money than their coworkers, but they're doing the same job. Tier 2 workers make about $14 an hour. Some of their counterparts make almost double than that. Joining us now, Peter Capelli, a professor of management at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. Good morning, sir.
Thank you.
And also two Tier 2 workers, Elisa and Mitchell, both auto workers in Michigan. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Elisa, let me begin with you. Is the job worth it? I mean, it probably seems unfair to you, but is it better to have the job at half of what your coworkers are making?
Well, I mean, it's definitely better to have a job than no job. There's, you know, that's kind of a start. And you know, I don't know if you've been here lately, but jobs are kind of hard to come by. And as far as, you know, making half of what our coworkers make, ideally, we won't always be stuck at half of what our coworkers make. It's, you know, a union job. We have hope that our union will get us up to a better wage and better benefits. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's better to have a job than no job. So it's for now, it's worth it. I hope.
That's Elisa. Mitchell, you're in the same situation now, but you actually started working in 2007 for GM. Why are you making the Tier 2 wage?
I was laid off in 2008, and at least the temporary employees at my plant were told that we would be brought back at traditional wage, but due to the whole going through bankruptcy and everything, I guess they had to cut our wages by $8 an hour to bring us back.
Are you, like Elisa, hoping for the promotions and the raises that are going to bring you up to the same level as your coworkers?
And that's what it is hope, but we haven't really gotten back a lot lately. We've been giving up. So hopefully long-term it'll turn into that, but that's what it is right now is hope.
That's Elisa and Mitchell, both auto workers in Michigan. Peter Capelli at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Explain this business model to me. I assume this is just about cutting costs.
Yeah, it's just about cutting costs. You know, I think the problem on the union side is they've only got so much leverage, and the question is how are they going to use it? So, you know, you could spend your energy and your power trying to protect the wages of the remaining people. Or you could do something different and give up concessions on the new hires. So the advantage of this arrangement, as you just heard, is that people who are coming in new to the jobs don't mind the fact that they're making less than people who had those jobs a while ago are making. You know, in the U.S. economy now, there's a bunch of people, virtually most people, aren't making as much money in real terms as people made a decade ago. Well, you know, that you don't notice that, right? And you don't seem to care that much about it, at least until you get on the job. So for the employers, the reason this is a good thing is it lowers costs, but it also creates an incentive to hire, because bringing new people in and adding jobs is now a lot cheaper than it was before. So that's the good news about it. The political problems we could talk about in a minute, I guess.
Well, Peter Capelli is a George W. Taylor Professor of Management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. To a certain extent, Peter, this doesn't feel new to me. I'm a woman. I've been, for almost all my life, been making less than my coworkers who are male and doing the exact same job. Is this the exact same situation that women and minorities? We have this comment from Brighton, Michigan, a listener there says, you're reporting this as if women and minorities have always had parity with their white male colleagues. Is this new?
Well, here's what's different about this one. It's saying as of a certain date, bang, like today, anybody hired after this date will make a lower starting wage than people hired before this date. So what's different about this is it's entirely based on the date in which you were hired. In that sense, it's a little arbitrary. This was actually created, at least in the U.S., by the airlines in 1983. American Airlines created this. And the typical model is that you, after this date, you make less money when you're hired, but eventually you catch up to the wages that you would have made after maybe in some cases 3 or 4 or 5 years. So all it really does is kind of stretch out the run-up with tenure to making higher wages. And you know, that's not so impalatable compared to other things that unions could have given up.
I guess, except, Elisa, does this also extend to the executives? Let's say you come in as a white-collar worker. Do you have to come in at a Tier 2 wage?
Not from my understanding, but I would like to make one important distinction between them. What the good professor said there, and that's, he says that, you know, it's okay because you don't really mind, and that's not true. We absolutely mind making a second-tier wage, particularly when, as you point out, our white-collar counterparts don't seem to have to give up the same things. We understand that we come in at a lower wage. We would like to have some time frame for when we will be making top pay. We would like to have some time frame of when things will get better. And, you know, we absolutely stand by our union as they bargain for us as our contract expires. We absolutely support our union. And we recognize two-tier strategies as union busting at its core. And, you know, we're broke, but we're not dumb. And we're not just the bottom line.
Mitchell, your thoughts? Do you feel the same way that Lisa does?
Yeah, basically. My biggest fear and people I talk to at work is that it's just going to get more and more and more progressively worse. There's going to be a higher percentage of two-tiers in every plant that the contract that passes. So it'll be a finish line that you never cross.
That's Mitchell and Elisa, both auto workers in Michigan. Also with us, Peter Capelli, George W. Taylor Professor of Management at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Really anxious to hear your takes on this as well at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Thanks to all of you, Peter, Elisa, and Mitchell. Tell us, would you work for less money than your coworkers if you're doing the exact job just to have a job? Paul in Ellis Island writes this. That system has been around for many years. It's called apprenticeship. The two-tier system is good only if tier two is a step toward tier one. And not apart from it. And in New York, somebody writes, no, and thanks to labor unions, I'll never be faced with such unfair practices. I'm completely protected. Strong unions are vitally important. What are your thoughts? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE.